We often get told about sort of older women, you know, 45, 50, that they're past it. As I'm fast approaching that time of life myself, I thought, hang on, this can't be it.
You've talked to me about the 48 different menopause symptoms.
Something typical I hear is I've lost my joy in life. And I think the thing that really kind of saddens me is when women come in to see me that they're feeling like they're a failure. I've had women say to me, I don't know, is it menopause? Is it my marriage? I don't know which one's which, you know. I'm thinking about divorcing my husband. Not yet, but maybe in 3 months' time it might be the right decision.
You've been very open about your own menopause journey.
A lot of my mentors and sort of older women almost feel like they'd fallen off the cliff. Suddenly there was this accelerated aging, weight gain. As a woman of colour, coming from a minority, equality's always been at my core. And I really thought women in midlife were not given that sort of equality that men were. And for me, I really wanted to drive that.
If you were going to give a single piece of advice to any woman already in or approaching this phase of life, what would you say?
I think that if you are at this point in life and you're not feeling like yourself,
welcome to Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wasko. In this series, I'll be chatting to a whole host of incredible guests to discuss the unique challenges, triumphs, and transformative experiences that often define us as women in midlife. Through shared personal stories and advice, we're going to tackle some of the most important and relevant women's issues to date. I see this as more than just a podcast. It's a movement to change the narrative around midlife so that women see their second act as a time of opportunity, renewal, and excitement. So join me, Debbie Wasko, on this journey of grit and grace, sponsored by the Better Menopause, science-driven solutions for women in menopause. My guest is a trailblazer in women's health. As a doctor, author, and broadcaster, she's a passionate pioneer and a visionary breaking down taboos when it comes to menopause and sexual well-being. Featured in Tatt, La Vogue and Grazia magazine, and also on the BBC and ITV, she's made a huge impact to thousands of women's lives, including mine, for well over two decades. Now, her ultimate aim is empowering women in midlife so that they feel healthy, confident, and sexy again. Because age is just a number, right? Welcome to my Grit and Grace podcast, Better Menopause's resident doctor, Dr. Shahzadi Harper. Thank you so much for being on my podcast. I wanted to talk firstly about the incredible work that you do supporting the women's health movement, the work that you've done in perimenopause and menopause. How did it all start? How did you start thinking about specialising in caring about women in midlife?
So lots of reasons, really. I mean, I think my mother has Alzheimer's, and I'm sure that accelerated around her midlife and menopause. I'm also the eldest of six girls in my family, so I always knew I was going to go through this stage. So there were also some selfish factors, if you want to think about them as selfish factors. I was single, and I'd seen a lot of my sort of mentors and sort of older women almost feel like they'd fallen off the cliff once they got to menopause. Suddenly there was this accelerated aging, weight gain, almost like a loss of themselves. And I thought, well, I'm single. I still want to mingle, you know, still want to go out. I don't want to lose my shine and sparkle. And I thought, I really need to find out more about this. And considering we don't really get taught much at medical school, in fact, I can't remember being taught about menopause at all at medical school. And part of my GP training, I think there was half a day, you know, at some point. And I used to see these women coming in, you know, from sort of 40 plus coming into my GP office with sort of menopausal symptoms. And I'd kind of be in a bit of a panic thinking, well, what am I meant to do? And I'd sort of look through books to see what HRT am I meant to prescribe them or what am I meant to do? And they'd come in with so many different symptoms, almost to the point that I'd, you know, roll my eyes. You know, as a younger woman, we often get told about sort of older women, you know, 45, 50, or even in their 40s, you sort of, that they're past it. And so, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I sort of thought that same thing, you know, when I'm in my 20s and 30s. And as I'm fast approaching that time of my of life myself, I thought, hang on, this can't be it. It can't be over. I've still got so much more to give, do, want to do. And I think the biggest driving force was really, it was about sort of fairness and equity. You know, as a woman of colour, coming from a minority, you know, equality's always been at my core. And I really thought women in midlife were not given that sort of equality, or, you know, that men were, or given that sort of, you know, sort of look in. And for me, I really wanted to drive that. You know, I really felt within the health service there was this gender inequality, and I needed to redress that balance. And that's that for me has been the core for me, you know, from sort of from a young age. I've always wanted equality, you know, and I've been driven by fairness.
How did you upskill yourself, and has it changed over the last 10 or 20 years? Because 0 to half a day of medical training on the menopause doesn't seem a lot.
You have to go out and upskill yourself, you know, if you want to do it. But it's something that you have to pay for yourself. You know, as a single mum, you know, with my daughter and things, you know, it's quite a big chunk of money that you have to spend. You also have to give up time. And initially I was a GP locum, so I wasn't a partner or a salaried doctor. So every time I went and did my menopause training, it meant I was losing income. So, but I decided it was a really investment for me. And I think also I really wanted to be really good at something, if that makes sense. I've been a GP and that's great. You learn so much and you pick up so many skills, but I really wanted to be sort of the best in something. And so that was also something that drove me forward. And I really put the time and energy. And for me, having done this and done the training, I really felt it was my calling in life, actually. And I love it. And it gave me a new passion and sort of vigour for life.
Tell me about what you see in clinic. So you've talked to me about the 48 different menopause symptoms. What do patients present with? What are the conversations that make up your day-to-day?
So many different ones. And I think, you know, one of the things I would say is I do think it's a speciality in itself. You know, I think, you know, looking after midlife, menopause and perimenopausal women, it's not just a little bolt-on onto this speciality or that. I think it is its own speciality in itself. And it's really evolved in the last sort of 5-6 years as well. I see so many different women, you know, and I think the thing that really kind of saddens me is when women are thinking that they, when they come in to see me, that they're feeling like they're a failure, or, you know, should they really be here? It's a natural stage in life, so why are they seeking help? And there's so many different symptoms, so many different reasons, and every woman has their own. I had one woman who came in and said, you know, my children say I'm not fun anymore because she's more irritable, angry, moody, short-tempered. Basically because she's not sleeping very well, her hormones are changing, well actually they're declining, and so they're really impacting so many different systems within her. Also, you know, somebody will come in and say, you know, I've gained weight, and particularly around the middle, and I've lost my sense of who I am, my identity. Something typical I hear is I've lost my joy in life, you know, that flatness in mood, anxiety, feeling overwhelmed. You know, capable, able women suddenly feel that they're not able to do what they could do before. I've had women say to me, you know, I'm thinking about going for a demotion. I've had other women come in and say, I don't know, is it menopause? Is it my marriage? I don't know which one's which, you know. You know, I'm thinking about divorcing my husband. I mean, when it comes to these big decisions, I do say sort of hold your horses, you know, let's just see, let's get things a little
don't
bit more balanced.
Yet.
Not yet, but maybe in 3 months' time, it might be the right decision. But you don't want to get to that point and then think, oh, actually, maybe it wasn't the right decision for me. So I think for me, there's very much women come in off balance, not really knowing who they are. And some symptoms they may never have heard of, like joint aches and pains, tingling mouth, you know, sort of tinnitus. Also, you know, it's not vain to say I'm losing my hair or my hair is thinning or I feel like my skin's changed, it's sagging, I feel I've aged or I don't look like myself anymore. I wake up and it feels like overnight I've suddenly aged 10 years. Because these are also real things that are going on, you know, metabolically as well as, you know, sort of the hormones affecting collagen production. So I think, you know, when people say, oh, maybe that's a bit vain, you know, is it just that they don't want to age? No one's saying that we're not going to age, but why should we do it in an accelerated manner? You know, physically, mentally, you know, and visually.
Talk to me a bit about HRT and your views on that, because it's an oft-discussed topic. Where do you stand? What do you see? How do you treat the patients that you see in clinic?
Well, I'll put it to you like this. You know, I had a blood clot sort of over 10 years ago from a skiing accident. And I remember one of the things thinking at the time is, oh my goodness, please, does that mean I won't be able to take HRT? And that's how passionate I felt about it, because I thought, you know, I think it does so much for a woman, you know, for her symptoms that she experiences in the here and now, and also, you know, for the future. And I think what I get annoyed about is that women not being given the information, and for women not to be able to make their own sort of choice. I think it's about women having choice and options. If you choose not to have HRT, hormone replacement therapy, because you know the facts and the figures around it, that's good. You know, it's fair and well. But I think if you are going by old data, you know, which we know isn't true, when they talk about risk of breast cancer, heart disease, you know, and also the fact that we have much more newer body identical hormone replacement therapies, then I think that, you know, that's wrong if a woman's been put off it because she's not been given the right information. So I'm a strong advocate of it, but I also don't think HRT is lifestyle replacement therapy. I don't think it's a silver bullet for every woman, you know, or the fact that I don't think it's a silver bullet at all. You do still have to work at your own health. It's a shared responsibility. And I feel strongly about that because I think sometimes, you know, having been a doctor now for 30 years, sometimes patients come in and think that you've got a magic wand and you can solve everything. And for me, very much health is a shared responsibility.
Talk to me about testosterone, because I think there's a lot of confusion about who should take it, should women take it, what are the side effects of taking it, and are there any alternatives to taking it?
So yes, testosterone, you know, I am a fan of it. I don't think it suits every single woman. I think the misconception is the fact that people think it's a male hormone. But as women, we produce a lot of testosterone. Yes, most of it gets converted into estrogen for us, but we still use testosterone for things like drive, motivation. It's also a neuromodulator, you know, it works in the brain to enhance sort of mood, connectivity. So when women talk a lot about brain fog, you know, sort of mental sharpness or that drop in mental sharpness, I think that testosterone can really help with sort of mood, metabolism as well, you know, from muscle point of view, and also insulin resistance. You know, we know that a lot of inflammation and disease processes at this point, insulin is, you know, one of the things that are a big role in that. So I think testosterone is key for women when it comes to sort of, you know, sort of mood, metabolism, mental health, you know, that connectivity within the brain, also libido. But I don't think it's just a libido hormone. And, you know, it's not the only reason why I will prescribe it. I think it can help many women, not all. There are side effects, and I think it's important that a woman always has her blood test done before she embarks on this journey, and also optimises the other parts of her HRT. If she's on oestrogen, if she's on an oral, it should be changed to a transdermal, ideally, and also, you know, progesterone if she's got a womb. So I think that testosterone side effects can be things like some women get headaches, acne, hair thinning and loss. Also, you know, hair in places where they don't want it.
They don't fancy it, yeah.
Yeah, and also, you know, clitoromegaly, you know, and you can have an overdrive, you know, in sex drive as well. So it can, there can be so many side effects to it. And that's why I think you do have to sort of embark upon it cautiously, you know, with a practitioner who knows what they're doing. But the benefits can be for many women, as it was for me. It can be that missing piece of the jigsaw. You know, you can feel good on your general HRT, but it just feels that it's that cherry on the cake. You know, it just helps with that sort of sharpness, alertness, and strength as well, and stamina. You know, some women have come back and said to me, oh my goodness, you know, I've been for a really long cycle ride, which I wouldn't have been able to do before. But like I said, some women do get side effects, you know, as they do with other forms of hormones as well. And so I think sometimes the message is that everybody should be on it, or if you're not on it, something's not quite right. But actually it's not. It's about tailoring it to each individual.
You've been very open about your own menopause journey. Sometimes it's a bit physician heal thyself, isn't it? Talk a little bit about how it was for you and whether you knew that that's what was happening to you and how you treated yourself and your own symptoms.
I mean, I would say because there's so little education and information around menopause and particularly perimenopause, and we're only told about sort of hot flushes and mood changes, even for myself, you know, when I started off in my early 40s experiencing symptoms, just like probably many women, I probably thought it was life. You know, I took on a new partnership, you know, my father was ill, a relationship was coming to an end. So you kind of put so many of your symptoms down to that. And, you know, I sort of smiled because I say the penny dropped when I was at a menopause conference listening to a few different cases. And I thought, oh my goodness, that's me. Because I didn't have hot flushes, but I had brain fog, I had joint aches and pains, I felt really tired, and I felt flat in mood, I felt anxious. And I'm not really an anxious type of person, other than maybe when I have PMS. So, you know, I'm very much hormone aware because of my own PMS history. But when perimenopause came along, because there isn't that much information around it, and I actually think it's probably the more challenging part of the whole menopause transition.
How do we define it?
So menopause is when your periods have ended, you know, and you've had 12 months without a period. And perimenopause is that stage before. So if you think for most women, menopause is around the age of 50, perimenopause can start 10 years earlier. So it can start in your late 30s, early 40s. And for someone like me of South Asian origin, menopause happens even earlier. So for me, potentially changes could have been happening in my late 30s. And I think it's about raising that awareness so people know about it. And also understanding there are, like you said, 48 symptoms, if not more. And it's more than just hot flushes and period changes and mood changes. There are so many more systems that it affects in our bodies. Because hormones, I think, almost when we've been growing up, have been just put down to periods, pregnancy, fertility, those kind of things. Whereas actually, they are these powerful chemical messengers that affect so many different aspects of us, you know, mood, appetite, sleep, muscle, gut, so many different things, more than just our reproduction.
Why is gut health so important for women in midlife?
Because I think that, well, gut health I think is important throughout life. And I think that people aren't so aware of it. It's really important for our immunity, for our mood, and because it regulates, particularly in midlife, why it's so much more important is it also affects our hormone balance. You know, you might have heard of the term estrobolome. So we know that as our estrogen levels decline, it also affects the diversity of our gut microbiome, which then impacts the rest of us. And, you know, some symptoms which maybe aren't so medical, like bloating, you know, like gut transit, often really impact women in midlife when they're going through this hormonal change, more so maybe than at other point in life. And we know for women as well that stress also impacts our gut so much more. And women are going through a very stressful time when they're going through midlife and perimenopause and menopause.
You talked about having a lot of sisters, even more than me.
Yes, okay.
How does this conversation run in a matriarchy, in a sisterhood, given your expertise? What did you know about your mother's menopause, and how has the conversation been between you and your sisters?
It's interesting because my mother never really spoke about her menopause, and I think I was at university when she was going through her changes. But I remember things like suddenly this mum that was very bossy, confident, feisty, was not locking the bathroom door because she was getting panic attacks. She was sort of standing outside, you know, because she was feeling hot and you know, sort of getting hot flushes. And I'm the big sister, so I am sort of the bossy one in amongst my, sort of sisters, and they sort of take the lead from me. So I think in my family, it's quite easy for me just to talk about it because I've always broken lots of barriers in the past. But what was really interesting was when I wrote the book, The Perimenopause Solution, and I showed it to my mum. And I don't know if you've seen the outline of it. On the front cover, there's an outline of a naked woman. And my mother looked at the book and looked at me, looked at the book, looked at me, and I thought, oh, no. You know,
She's
going to say, this naked woman. And I said, you know, and she said to me, is this going to be printed in Pakistan? And I thought, oh, dear. I said, well, I don't know, Mum. I could ask the publisher. But her comment was, this should, because so many women need it. And it actually made me feel really emotional when she said that, because I thought, she suffered through her own journey. And she said sometimes, she said, you know, no one knows how I've suffered through it, you know, having to bring up 8 children, you know, sort of bringing the shopping home, cooking for everybody, that how I still had to get on and do everything, you know, even though I was having heavy periods, feeling tired. And, you know, we need to be, you know, sort of talking about it amongst women much more so that women don't have to go through what she, well, I think that sense of community is really important. So you're not doing it alone.
How is menopause and perimenopause different for black and brown women in your experience?
So I would say, especially for women, you know, for black women, they do tend to go through it a little bit earlier, a couple of years, I would say. And some symptoms seem to be worse, you know, things like hot flushes and night sweats. I think for brown women of South Asian origin, I think they experience other symptoms like sort of more joint aches and pains, fatigue, you know, that total body pain, also things like vaginal dryness, you know, pelvic floor issues. So I think it can be quite different, and the journey can be sometimes longer as well for some. I think there's an element of maybe more stress in their lives. I also think socioeconomic factors have a huge bearing, and I think sometimes we don't talk about that, and often women of, you know, black and brown origin tend to be in lower socioeconomic groups, you know, diet isn't so good, you know, maybe there are other health comorbidities going on, weight may be a bigger issue in those in those sections of society. So I think these all then influence the menopause journey and the impact of symptoms.
If you were going to give a single piece of advice, I know that's difficult because you have so much wisdom and amazing advice, to any woman already in or approaching this phase of life, what would you say?
I think that if you are at this point in life and you're not feeling like yourself, go and go for a checkup. You know, it could be perimenopause, it could be menopause, it could be many other things going on as well, you know, medically. I think what I would say, the one piece of advice is to take charge, take control, because no one else is going to do it for you.
And your life mantra, Dr. Harper, if mine is that you need to have grit and grace in equal measure, and that's the name of the podcast, how would you summarise what it is that's the heart of you and the heart of the work that you do?
I think it's evolved over time. Sometimes I think as women we hold ourselves back. Okay, I think we hold ourselves back in so many aspects, or we think we have to be perfect to do something. And for me, I think that, look, just go ahead, make some mistakes and just do it. And I think, you know, just don't hold yourself back. Go forward, really.
Dr. Harper, thank you. Thank you so much for joining me on my podcast and all of this amazing information and for the work that you do with us at the Better Menopause. We appreciate you every day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening today, and thanks to our sponsor, The Better Menopause. For more content like this, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel for full video interviews or follow us on socials. See you next time as I'm joined by more incredible guests here on Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wascoe.